with another 10,000 in the planning stages. You could almost say that this marks the beginning of a new era in town. It isn't just a demonstration that we are clearly out of the recession. It is the manifestation of a paradigm shift. Younger people are foregoing the mortgage on a house in the suburbs in favor of the flexibility of apartment living in hip, upscale complexes near uptown. It seems like a sudden shift, and as you drive down South Boulevard, you can't help but wonder, can our current infrastructure handle all of this? Who are all these people who will fill all these apartments? What does this mean for the real estate market today and in the future when these renters might want to become owners? We're going to explore that and more this hour with Eli Portillo. He is a business reporter with the Charlotte Observer who follows these trends and writes about them frequently. Welcome back to the program, Eli.
Thanks for having me.
David Raven is president and CEO of Northwood Raven, a company that concentrates on developing, building, and managing luxury for-rent and for-sale infill and mixed-use housing throughout the Southeast. I hope I got all of that right. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Get a little closer to that microphone, if you would. And Jeff Michael is also with us. He's back with us, I should say. He's the director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. Thank you for being here as well.
Good to be back.
David, let me ask you first, because you build homes and apartments, buildings all over the Southeast. Is the surge in apartment building right now in Charlotte a Charlotte thing, or is this happening all over the Southeast, all over the country?
It's happening all over the country. In fact, I just was in Los Angeles yesterday, and exact same phenomenon going on there. But to put it in perspective, the property we were visiting office next door was 2,800 units being built in a single project. So that, I mean, 2,800 units in one project is pretty staggering.
Yeah. But why?
It's a variety of factors. You've certainly seen a resurgence in terms of the demographics of the ideal renter profiles now entering the market. There was a slowdown during the recession, so there was pent-up demand. And I think you've seen that group entering the market just saw what happened to the homeowners that owned during the recession. And so I think it's a perfect storm in that they're all entering the market, and developers have rushed to meet that demand in each of these markets across the country.
Is that what's happening here, Eli?
Yes. Here in Charlotte, you know, the number you mentioned, more than 10,000 apartment units under construction, that's a record for this city. That number's from Real Data, which tracks Charlotte apartment building. There have never been this many units under construction at once in Charlotte before.
Is it all over town, the 10,000 units that we're talking about?
Well, a lot of it is,
looks like 10,000 sure. Going up on South Boulevard.
Yeah, that's quite a lot there. It's concentrated, a lot of it, in these close-in neighborhoods near uptown or in uptown. You've got big projects underway in Plaza Midwood, more than 1,000 units under construction in a one-mile radius there around Central. You've got a lot in Elizabeth that people are looking at, in Noda, in Dilworth, in Southend. So it's a lot of uptown and the close-in ring neighborhoods, but there is stuff being built all around town in addition to that.
This doesn't just happen overnight. The recession doesn't end, and then suddenly developers say, okay, 10,000 units, let's go, let's break ground. This takes planning and probably several years of planning and foresight. When did it start happening in Charlotte, and when did developers start predicting that that's where the business was going to go?
You know, there was an interesting study, Mike, that Harvard put out in 2012 on the state of housing in America. And a lot of people have talked about this being a recent phenomenon, but they actually looked at the decade between 2000 and 2010 and, you know, much of that before the recession. And this trend towards rentership was something that they were beginning to see even then. So I don't know in the industry how far they look ahead and what kinds of studies they look at, but certainly studies like that indicated that this was not an overnight phenomenon that happened.
And, you know, from the development perspective, I mean, we've always been in multifamily. So we've been constantly researching and seeing where good opportunities exist. What I think is interesting is that a lot of people from retail, office, single family all jumped into multifamily when they saw that that was one of the real estate asset classes that was doing well.
Is there a danger in this? And I ask you because you have particular – your company has particular experience in this because you bought The View – from the original developer. It was going to be a condominium high-rise downtown. How many stories is it, 50?
51.
It was going to be a condominium, and I have a friend who lives in the building. He bought in the building.
Hope he's happy.
Yeah. Well, there's a story into of itself. But it turned into apartments. So that's the story of developers just prior to the recession building all these condominiums. We had all these condominiums going up downtown, many more on the drawing boards, and suddenly it stopped. And they were in mid-construction and in the middle of development. So is there a danger in this when you're looking at 10,000 apartment units going up right now with 10,000 more in the planning stages?
Yes. And I'll say this as a developer. We are always going to overbuild. And that's not just an apartment issue. Developers are going to go until they can't. I think that's happened in single family. I think that's happened in condominiums. It will happen in apartments. The governor is when debt and equity says enough and the returns aren't showing up how they should be, and it will stop and switch. But yes, I think we will go until the market tells us we can't.
And I wanted to ask you that question for another reason, because in 2013, you were quoted in the Charlotte Business Journal as saying you were beginning to feel a little cautious about Charlotte. And here you sit this morning in 2015 talking about this. Why were you cautious then, and are you still?
Well, and there's always a lag because you can't build an apartment community overnight, even though it feels like that's what's happening. It does take several years for it, for the planning, for the design, for the permitting, for the construction to delivery. So I still feel the same way. I feel as though we're putting a lot of product up. I do feel like, unfortunately, we're probably concentrating the product in the same area. And maybe my bigger concern is it's the exact same product. So it is if you go in from one apartment to another, it's the same.
We're going to talk about that in a second here. Eli, is this the bubble? You wrote in the Observer an article, the headline mm-hmm. for which was apartment boom, not necessarily a bubble, but get ready for higher vacancy. Doesn't a higher vacancy indicate a bubble?
Well, yes, it could. But to put it in perspective, during the aftermath of the recession in 2010, the apartment vacancy rate here citywide hit almost 14%. And right now, in the latest numbers we have, it's at 6.7. Mm-hmm. So the projections show that it could go citywide to around 8%. That would still be way less next year than it was during the aftermath of the recession.
Are the vacancies in the older buildings or in the newer buildings as well?
Well, it varies. The highest vacancy rate right now, I believe, is in Uptown, which also has the highest rent. Mm-hmm. The lowest is actually in some of the older markets just north of Uptown, which also have the lowest rent. And, you know, I was talking with a guy who develops office buildings, and he said, if I could put up a speculative building and know that it was going to be 92% occupied probably, I'd be building a lot more offices. Hmm. So even, you know, 8% vacancy rate would still mean more than 9 out of every 10 apartments occupied.
Here's the question I always ask myself as I drive down South Boulevard, which I do on a regular basis, and I'm looking at all of – I mean, if people have not driven down through South End from, say, East Boulevard, West Boulevard, South – you have no idea what is going on between South Boulevard and Tryon Street. There, it's just like a new world. It's a new city being built right now, even as we speak. And I always ask myself, where are these people living now? Who's going to fill all of these buildings, all of these apartments? And how will our current roads handle the influx of cars from all the people living in all those units?
Well, where are the people coming from? I think that aligns perfectly with the population growth of this community. And much of that population growth is in-migration from other places. Many of them are young, and so they are looking for many of them that starter place to live. Now, the question about the more of the urban fabric and the infrastructure to handle it, you mentioned the South Boulevard apartments. Most of those are within walking distance of light rail. Now, I'm not saying that all of them are using that, but they still need their car to go elsewhere. And I guess that most of those apartment buildings, I haven't studied them, but have parking garages to accommodate that. But it does seem to be accommodating it, perhaps because of the mix, the opportunity and the amenity of light rail, giving people options depending on what they're doing, whether it's
entertainment or weekend. Well, if you're living in one of those units and you're going downtown to work, you're golden.
That's right.
If you're going downtown for entertainment, you're golden. But yep. if you work in the South Park area or the University City area, or you work down in Pineville or Ballantyne, you got to use your car.
Absolutely.
You got to.
Yep.
So that seems to me, if you're putting, I don't know how many units are along South Boulevard, not 10,000, but it's pretty damn close to it.
Yeah. South End was actually identified as the most active apartment submarket for new construction yeah. in the country in a December
wow.
study.
So
thousands of units being
when
built
those
there.
All are up and when they're all occupied or when they're 92% occupied, that's going to significantly, it would seem to me, increase traffic flow on South Boulevard, Tryon Street, and all the side streets, correct?
Yes. South Boulevard, you know, if you've driven down it recently, it's already very congested, and there's not a lot of great pedestrian connectivity,
right.
too, which I think will be more of an issue coming up as a lot of these young people who are moving in there want to be able to walk to things like the new Publix that
right.
just opened last week.
The new Publix just opened. Harris Teeter's putting in a new store across South Boulevard and near Publix, so that's
yep.
going to attract
Pepsi
more traffic.
The Pepsi site is on the market as mm-hmm. well, and that could be another mixed-use project within a mile of those two you just mentioned.
Is the city ready for this? Can we handle this? Do we have the infrastructure? Is planning – because it seems to me they would have done something before the apartments went in, not afterward, but that's what's going to happen.
Well, you know, a lot of these are being built along the transit lines, and the thinking, as mm-hmm. Jeff said, is yep. that will help. But, you know, if you are in Charlotte
yeah.
and – you have a job that's not right along the light rail line, you need cars. There's public transit infrastructure.
And I think that's the other planning question. We talk a lot about mixed use, and the great planner's dream is that these places will be built both with the residential but mm-hmm. also the office.
Has that
space.
Happened?
And I think that's the big question.
Is there retail on the first floor of most of those apartments? Is there? Will there be? Will there be restaurants? Will there be small bodegas and other retail things?
There are a lot of restaurant, bar, and office space in a lot of these apartment complexes. Mm-hmm. What you haven't seen nearly as much of is soft goods, you know, apparel, mm-hmm. Other things that you might find at the mall.
Right.
So there are plenty of places to get a beer in South End, more than ever. There aren't as many shopping options you can walk to.
You're the developer. Why is that? Why aren't there dry cleaners and boutiques and places like that going up in these places?
You know, it actually makes the financing of these projects more difficult. So, and I would say this was even exacerbated during the recession. The banks are not thrilled when you have multiple uses in there. They prefer to underwrite one asset
Why?
Class. Complications of one asset class doing well and another not. We've done a couple mixed-use projects, especially in my Crosland days, and it's not all the time that all asset classes will work, where the retail's in high demand, the office is in high demand, the residential's in high demand. It's usually fluctuating.
And where are the other – where's the other influx? If we have 10,000 units going up, they're not all along South Boulevard. Where are the other major projects going up right now?
Well, and I think Eli touched on I think South Park is a node that has mm-hmm. quite a bit going on. We have a big project in Plaza Midwood, Morningside. So we – and I've seen a lot of activity since it's gone on there. Uptown, certainly we've seen some announcements of some mm-hmm. towers, and we have one of them. However – you know, that's the majority of the nodes.
And is the mixed-use idea difficult in all of those places?
It is if you want a substantial amount of okay. mixed use and not just one store on
We're
the
We're going to come
floor.
Back and talk more about all this, what this means for real estate, what this means if the young people who are moving into these apartments suddenly decide 5 years from now they want to buy, what happens then? We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and DHG Wealth Advisors, providing more principled wealth management. Since 2000, DHG Wealth Advisors has provided a unique investment experience to its clients. Details on the difference at DHGWA.com. Well, when author Janice Holly Booth last joined us on this program, she talked about her book, which chronicled her solo travels all over the world. Shortly after that, she embarked on a very different adventure into the mind of a mass murderer. She followed the story of the murder of a family by one of the sons of that family, and what emerged is a much bigger story about the complexity of mental health diagnosis, how to understand those who need help, and much more. And she'll share what she learned with us Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, the Senate moves ahead on Loretta Lynch's nomination for Attorney General. David Petraeus is sentenced for leaking military secrets, and the FBI arrests ISIS supporters in Minnesota.
The Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about the apartment boom in Charlotte, with 10,000 apartments under construction, 10,000 more in the planning stages. As Eli Portillo pointed out, this is a record for the city of Charlotte. Eli is a business reporter for the Charlotte Observer, who covers this regularly. David Raven is president and CEO of Northwood Raven. They are a developer, developing some of these units. And Jeff Michael is director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. These apartments that are going up, what's the average size? Are they studios? Are they one bedrooms, two bedrooms? Are there any three bedroom apartments? Are they all pretty much the same size?
You know, if you look at the new ones, they probably are, and they're predominantly studios and one bedrooms. That has become the majority of the units.
Doesn't that limit your market severely?
Well, I think the idea was that it was the new urban dweller was coming, and that they wanted their own place.
But that means they're going to move, because if they're young and single, they might do a studio, maybe a one bedroom. If they get married, they might have the one bedroom. But if they have a child, they're moving.
They are, but you know, let's think about what developers are doing. They're building for the now. They're looking at who the renter is right now, and that's what the demand was, and so that's certainly what they're delivering to the market.
What do renters tell you that they want, and what must you have to attract a renter?
Well, I think someone said it best, maybe one of my competitors, saying it's an arms race as it relates to what renters want. They want a lot of amenities. They want a lot of services.
An amenity? I mean, give me an example, some amenities.
Amenities include a pool. We have a golf simulator where you can hit things, business center, exercise, everything you can think of. And truthfully, it started in student housing. Student housing has become a resort, and so they're at least expecting that.
And you're an expert in luxury apartment developments. What's luxury? What does that mean?
Luxury would refer to the type of amenities, having everything and it being the highest end, and also the upfit of the units, it being condo quality.
Because, you know, when you buy a house, when you buy a condo, when you look at an apartment, you're looking at wallboard, ceilings, and floors, except in the kitchen and bathroom. Where you actually have something installed.
Right.
So what are they demanding in kitchens and bathrooms? These people aren't going to cook.
Well, funny you say that. And I think you're right. Actually, I think that convenience is the name of the game. And I think having the grocery stores that are going to be on South End, I hope they have a lot of pre-prepared food. I think that's the idea.
But what do they want? What is the granite countertop and the Viking and the Wolf appliances? And is that a must-have in an apartment, or can it be lower level than that in a luxury unit?
There might be a discrepancy between what they believe they must have and what they use. Certainly, I think they do expect something to be nicer than what they moved out of, even though what they're moving out of today is nothing like we had when we were in school. I think they're expecting it to be a step above what they just left, and they want to be able to show it off to their parents and friends.
And this is a paradigm shift, because baby boomers, when they grew up, when they left home and they got out of college or got their first job, most of us, at least I had to rent, but the goal was to buy a house, because that's your biggest investment. The house is going to accumulate over the years. It's going to raise in value. You're going to be able to use that as a piggy bank. That, we learned, is not necessarily true in the recession, which has led to this rental thing, I suppose. But from an old person waiting to die, looking at this, I'm thinking, you're throwing that money away renting when you could be putting it into paying off a mortgage for something that you will ultimately own. I know that the penthouses in The View, for instance, rent for from $7,000 to $8,000 a month. Now, surely that's high end. What are the relatively new units, Uptown, Mid-Plaza, Midwood, Noda? What do they rent for?
Well, I think the studios average around $1,300 a month. Would be the studios to one bedrooms.
Can you get a mortgage for $1,300 a month? I think you can.
Well, I feel like the millennial representative on this show. And
yes, you are.
You know, I'll tell you personally, my wife and I are renting right now. Many of our friends are renting. But I know people in my age bracket, especially those who have started having kids, who are either buying, looking to buy, or have bought. So I think that going forward, the big question really is how big a shift towards permanent or long-term renting is there going to be? Because there's a lot of difficulty now in getting a mortgage, but that doesn't mean that people my age are all committed to living in one-bedroom apartments with high-end appliances forever.
Because I was going to ask you, what is it when you talk to your friends, because you are the millennial on this panel, when you talk to your friends, what are the reasons they're giving you for renting? Is it because they witnessed what happened in the housing market?
I think a lot of it has to do with liquidity. You know, people in my age range, late 20s, early 30s, jobs are uncertain. Even though the economy has recovered, employment is not guaranteed. And, you know, even people who work for the banks feel that these days.
And those who work for newspapers certainly feel it.
Oh, no, we're totally job secure. You know, the thing is, I was actually talking with a condo developer yesterday, and he told me back in the day, you know, mid-2000s, you could sell a condo in an afternoon. Yeah. So it felt like not a huge burdensome commitment. Now, if you want to sell a condo, it might be on the market for months and you might not make back all your money.
Yeah.
So if you're in a situation where you're thinking, I might, you know, move to a new city and Charlotte's very transient in a few weeks or in a few years, it doesn't make sense to buy. And I think that combined with mortgage financing is really what's driving a lot of the shift to rental.
Rents, I'm told, are rising even as the number of units are about to become much more. Well, there'll be more units available to rent. But rents have been rising. At what point does it become sensible to buy or more comfortable to buy? I mean, when you realize you're putting down $1,500 a month on an apartment, and your friend who's living in South Charlotte in a house is paying $1,100 for a house a month. Maybe he had to put a lot of money into it to get into that, to get the mortgage to that level. At what point does it become smarter to buy? And at what point do you, as a developer, start thinking, we need to convert these to condominiums?
Well, we're developers, so we will when that happens. Certainly, we'll go the other way as soon as the market tells us to. I would say, though, that the rent will hit its ceiling when the market says that they're not going to pay it. Most of the newer properties are on daily pricing. So the rents are reset every day based on
daily
supply and
pricing. It's like buying an airline seat.
Or a hotel room.
It's the same software, actually.
Exactly.
Is it really?
Wow.
Wow. So what's it based on?
It calculates availability and demand every day. And the pricing is set accordingly.
Hokey. Is there a good day of the week, a good time of the day to buy, to rent? Because it's like an airline ticket. Tuesday afternoon at 3 is a good time to buy an airline ticket.
I think it's so new, we haven't figured that out yet.
The analytics will tell us, though, soon enough.
What is happening, I think, with all this apartment development, particularly in and around Uptown and South End, is exactly what we talked about, Jeff, many times before on this program with regard to new urbanism, with perhaps not the picture of the live-work-play aspect, because there's not enough retail in some of these places. Your expertise, your area of expertise is conservation and development issues, sustainable development issues. Does this fit into that well?
Well, I think that's a big question. Many urban planners are excited. They're seeing the realization of decades of visioning that we move away from sort of the big box strip development that we've seen in suburbs for much of the last half of the 20th century, and part of that equation is looking for denser residential development close in the urban core. So this certainly fits all of that. I think the big question now, some of the issues that we've touched on, is if you take the market dynamics away in terms of what motivates the developers to build these places and look at it from the perspective of what kind of communities are we building, which is definitely related because these choices to live in these apartment buildings close in is a lifestyle choice that these millennials and others, even retirees, are looking to live closer in. They're not just buying that building. They're buying these neighborhoods and these communities. And one of the big questions that even advocates of denser development, apartment buildings being built in these places like South End, Uptown, they're beginning to ask, is the design, the character, the lack of mixed use in terms of, you know, retail options and even places to work office space that you may not have to get in your car and drive to South End or Ballantyne to work. Are we accommodating those? And those are basic planning decisions. Certainly, local government can incentivize the private sector to do certain things in that respect, but it may also require some form of regulation as well to require that.
You mentioned seniors. We know that there are lots of reasons why millennials and younger people want to be in these places. It's carefree. It is if you need to leave because you've been transferred or you got a better job in another city, you don't have to sell a house. You just say, I'm out of here, et cetera. It's convenient while you're here. It's brand new and beautiful and sparkly and fresh. What about older people who are downsizing, empty nesters? Are they comfortable living in that environment with all these young people who are, you know, pretty hip and happening and going to bars at night and partying all day and night on the weekends and using the pool? Or are there certain developments that they'll shy away from because of that? How do you accommodate both populations?
I've actually been surprised. We have seen a number of empty nesters move down into the urban areas for the activity to see that. And we were originally setting these things up to isolate those folks, and they said, no, we want to be in the mix. We want to see this. Now, would they appreciate parties going until 2 a.m.? No. But they do. They like the walkability. I think actually that market has been the one that no one's really focused on, but there is a number of empty nesters that don't feel like they need to move into a care facility, still have a lot of activity left in their lives, and they want to be in the urban core as much as anybody.
And, of course, these apartments make a pretty good living available for people who are not ready to buy a house because perhaps their financiers aren't ready for that commitment. Or maybe they don't make enough money to get a loan. What about lower income folks? Are these units affordable for lower income people? Are we building any workforce and or what you would call affordable housing in these complexes?
I think that's one of the big questions this community is wrestling with right now. I think most people would say the answer is no. In these particular neighborhoods, these places that we're talking about where we're seeing this incredible boom, for those, and we're talking, you know, when people talk about affordability, there is what some people refer to as workforce housing, the teachers, the firefighters, but then there are those who are making a lot less than that. And there's a lot of debate and discussion when we start talking about affordability, which subset of the population are we talking about there? I think it's probably fair to say that there's very little affordable housing for those on the lowest end of the income spectrum.
One of the incentives, I'm told, for developers building along the light rail line in South End has been subsidies for the city. And I read, I think, in the Observer that they cost the taxpayer about $250,000. Is that in total?
That was a particular subsidy for the city sponsoring the rezoning for complexes along there, which is not a huge amount of money.
No.
But yes, the city has been very active in encouraging development along the light rail line.
But now I'm told the city's reconsidering subsidies for building along the light rail line, especially as it expands north toward a university where we sit today. Is that because that they feel that those subsidies are no longer needed or because the kind of construction that's resulted from those subsidies is not exactly what they had in mind?
Well, I think that a lot of it is, like you said, they're clearly doing very well, developers, and a subsidy, especially a smaller one, a few thousand dollars to sponsor a rezoning, clearly is not necessary. Mm-hmm. But the bigger part of that subsidy is actually the city working to help expedite and smooth those rezonings. So beyond the money, developers I've talked with are concerned about the impact in terms of the speed of rezoning procedures. And another thing driving this is, as you know, the city doesn't have a lot of loose change right now,
right.
Big budget holes, and you know they need to close those somehow.
You've written about the big wave of millennials moving to town and renting apartments. Where are they coming from, and why are they coming here?
Well, I think personally I'm an example of that. Like most of those millennials, I came here for a job. I came here from the Northeast, and I think that's a fairly typical slice of who you're seeing move here. You've got a lot of people who are coming down for work with the banks, as always, but also people who are coming for non-financial companies. Red Ventures employs a ton of young workers. They've got 75% of their workers are in the millennial age range, roughly people born after 1980. So it's beyond Wells Fargo and Bank of America. it's you know, expanded to new areas of the economy. I'll just give you an example. In my little area where I live, my immediate neighbors are from Cincinnati and Cleveland. And it feels like everyone I run into is from Ohio these days. Apparently the word's out there that this is a good place to live with some better weather.
Yeah, we keep being told that millennials have certain aspirations for what they want their jobs to be like. They want their employer to be involved in public service. They want their employer to give them time off for public service. They want their employer to put the bubblegum machines all over the building and have snacks in the afternoon and nap time.
Nap pods.
Yeah, nap pods and things like that, which I got to tell you. But anyway, we've also read that about these millennials as seen through the eyes of planners and consultants and other experts, and a lot of what they say sounds to me like the typical pie-in-the-sky snake oil sales pitch that people get. We're told that we have to attract millennials to a city. They're going to, and to do that, we want them here because they will bring creative jobs with them. They don't want to drive cars. They don't want to be tied down to a mortgage. They'll switch jobs on a dime. How much of that do you think is true? Because that's what's driving a lot of this apartment development. How much of that is true? And how much of that is just a sales pitch from consultants?
I mean, who knows? But I think there's no question this younger generation views urban lifestyle choices differently than my generation. Maybe that's because there are more choices and amenities like light rail going along with it. You know, a lot of us as planners and people who've been looking at Charlotte for so long look back to the 1994 Final Four that came here and how they had to put this fake street up on South Tryon Street have a sense of place. And we've come a long way from that. And that is, I think, impacting lifestyle choices and where people choose to live. And I think the millennials definitely are demanding that. Now, we can also, though, look at the recent U.S. Census population data that came out, the estimates that they put out every year last year that showed that this trend that we saw since 2000 and since the recession of the urban cores in America, and Charlotte was no exception, had outpaced the suburban counties like Union County, has now switched. It's flipped. And now the surrounding counties like Union, Cabarrus, Lancaster even is the fastest growing county in our region now, are growing again. And they're growing faster than Mecklenburg, which tells us if many of these people are newcomers, if they are a younger generation, that this millennial generation perhaps is not monolithic in terms of those lifestyle preferences.
Well, one thing I think all young people, I don't care whether you're from the millennials or you're a Generation X or a baby boomer or the greatest generation, one of the things you want when you're young is to try things on for size. Right. You want what's new and shiny and the latest thing, what's hip and happening now. And the problem with that is what's hip and happening now is not hip and happening tomorrow. So when you put up a brand new spanking apartment building with all the amenities and next year something down the street and is opening up and it's brand newer and brand more sparkling, I'm using terrible grammar here, do you not re-sign your lease and move down the street? What happens? We'll find out the answer to that question and more when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Children's Theater of Charlotte, now registering for summer camp and presenting Dr. Seuss's The Cat in the Hat, now through May 3rd. Tickets available now at ctcharlotte.org. The Senate has confirmed Loretta Lynch to lead the Justice Department. David Petraeus has been sentenced for leaking military secrets, and the FBI has arrested Islamic State supporters in Minnesota. A panel of journalists joins Diane Rehm in 20 minutes for an analysis of the week's top national stories, the International Hour at 11, on The Diane Rehm Show, coming up next here on WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation about all these apartments going up around town, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Being a police officer is dangerous. It's full of risks. But amazingly, that is not the most stressful part of the job sometimes.
I think the evidence is pretty clear that the sources of stress tend to come mostly from administrative issues internal to the organization.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Very Thin Blue Line, next time on Marketplace from APM.
That's Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Jeff Michael, director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. David Raven is president and CEO of Northwood Raven. They are developers in town and all over the Southeast, actually. They develop high-end luxury apartment and condominium units and other things as well. And Eli Portillo is a business reporter for the Charlotte Observer who has been covering extensively the apartment boom that's been going on in the city. 10,000 units coming online, 10,000 more in the planning stage. So with so many of these places being built and an attraction even I hold for what's new and shiny right now, if you're renting and you have a lease that's up in a year and we're building all of these apartments and next year there's a new apartment in close proximity to where you're living now, why would I re-sign when I can move down the street and get a brand new kitchen and more amenities? Why would I do that?
Well, I think typically, there is a little bit of a discrepancy of pricing between the newest and something that's a little bit older. But your question's a good one. And I do think as we've touched on it, as the apartments begin to look the exact same and the architects are just pulling off the same design off the shelf for every developer, we could be headed towards a commodity type pricing structure where it's only based on pricing because you would get something very similar down the street compared to what you're in.
I mean, in truth, there are only so many floor plans that you can design for a one-bedroom or a studio apartment or a loft. You can't really do all that much with the space aside from what? Dress it up?
Well, I study architecture, and that's where I came from. So I like to think there are other designs that we could do. I do think it's just been a rush to deliver product, and there hasn't been as much scrutiny on the developer and the architect to say, what could we do better? What's sustainable? What will someone like over time? Can it be flexible? Could it turn into home ownership? We actually happen to be sponsoring a studio at UNCC just asking that question. But time, once you buy property to get the product to the market, is usually such a rush that the time you really have to be strategic is limited.
And you're talking really, I think, about the interior of these units when you talk about design. Am I right or wrong?
Interior and the whole product.
Okay, because one of the things that I'm noticing as these apartments go up is that it's giving our city a look. These are vast areas where either nothing has been there or old buildings that were fairly abandoned and needed to be gone because they outlived their usefulness, seem to be falling by the wayside, although some of them should be preserved just for the look of it. But we're developing this look. All these buildings have a similarity of look on their outer elevations. Is that good or bad?
Well, I think that's
because they're going to be around for a while.
Yes, they are. And the question is, are we really building neighborhoods and communities that have a diversity of design, style, use? There is this fear that we're creating these monolithic block after block of apartment buildings. Some folks are using the term density at all cost. So it really needs to be a partnership between the builders, the developers, the architects, those who are financing these developments, but also the public sector and neighborhoods to say, what do we preserve? I mean, having some good mix of historic preservation of what's there is probably important in terms of character, because increasingly, I think over time, the people who are choosing these places mm-hmm. aren't going to just be choosing what that particular building or that massive block of a building it looks like, but really the neighborhood. And that's what's going to determine their long-term viability in the marketplace.
But we are giving Charlotte a different look than it used to have. We are, and these buildings, as I said, are going to be around for a while. I don't know if they'll be here 50 years from now or 80 years from now, but there's housing in this country being used that was built 150 years ago or longer, particularly in the cities when the row houses went up in the early part of the 20th century. They're still being used. And they give character to the city. Are these the kinds of buildings that are designed to last 50, 80 years into the future, or will these buildings be here for 20 years and then torn down?
Well, I'll leave that question to the developers in terms of the quality, but I would point to Fourth Ward, for example. We think of it as this quaint Victorian area, but when you look, there are apartment buildings there, like the Frederick.
Right.
It was always the mixed use. It's close to new development. You have new condominium, well, relatively new condominium complexes that were built back in the 90s that are, I think, pretty high end. And so it's this mixture of uses, style, character, scale, I think, is important as well.
The mixture is what's missing.
Exactly.
Well, that's the point I'm getting to. Everything looks the same. Is that good or bad? And does the city have anything to say about that? Because we're building a city here, essentially.
Well, if you look at other parts of the city where there's not as much new construction going on now, you can see the styles that were being built, you know, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, garden-style apartments. And if you drive out to East Charlotte, that area of the city has not had a ton of new apartment construction. And you can kind of look back and see, oh, this is what everyone was building a few decades ago. And just a quick story. I've talked with a number of people who moved here in the 70s and moved to the east side of town, back where Eastland Mall used to be. And back then, I'm told that was the happening area. If you were a young professional moving to Charlotte, you would get an apartment over by Eastland Mall and, you know, you would never go to South End.
Right.
Now that dynamic, of course, has basically completely shifted. Eastland doesn't even exist anymore. If you're a young professional moving to Charlotte, you move somewhere like South End. And I think it's difficult to predict in 30, 40 years which of the areas that's under construction
will still be
thriving.
But if you look back historically, not only in Charlotte but other cities, is that what happens to rental units over time? They are built for a certain time period and what we think is what people want today. And then in 30 years, we look back at that, oh, that's what they were building in the 70s. I don't want to live there. Are we going to experience that in 2035 with these new 10,000 units that are going up?
I don't think there's any question that there's a life cycle of all construction and people either update it if it was originally built with quality as part of historic preservation or they replace it. I think after World War II, though, we moved – such as those examples around Eastland Mall, we moved to this sort of segregation of uses where we would put massive apartment complexes together outside of the single-family residential, outside of the office spaces and the retail. And what we're seeing now, perhaps, is that even as we're rediscovering our cities, we're taking that same model of big monolithic projects and placing them in our urban core. And can we do better? And I think we can. I think one of the real test places for this in the next decade is going to be the area between Uptown and NoDa as the light rail extension continues. And there you do have some really interesting historic fabric, both single family, but also old warehouses and buildings, but also a lot of vacant space. Mm-hmm. And the real question will be, will we have the willpower to preserve the best of that historic fabric, add the new stuff, and not replace it all with what we perhaps are beginning to see along South Boulevard of these big monolithic blocks of residential?
Let me ask another question before I share with you some of the things that have come in from listeners as we've been doing this program today, and that is how these buildings are being built. They're 4 to 5 to 6 stories tall, most of them, but they're massive in terms of the fact that they take a whole city block or more in all directions in many cases. And I'm just looking at this from the street. I haven't gone into any of these buildings. And they're all stick-built, which means 2x4s and plywood, et cetera. I don't see any firewalls. Now, there must be, and there must – I know that there are codes. But these are massive, multi-family, multi-unit buildings made out of wood. What if I have a kitchen fire?
Well, I would say what you're not seeing, and actually many developers have been arguing about, is the codes compared to the last round of apartments built in the 80s or even the 2000s is dramatically different. There's sprinkler pipes in between the trusses. You know, we deal with that when the cold temperatures come in and we have bursts all over the building because there is so much fire protection going on.
Okay.
There are firewalls within there. They're just built differently these days.
You just can't see them from the street as you're driving down the street. Okay. Well, I was curious about that because of that big L.A. fire that of the apartment building under construction, which was more massive than anything we got on going on here, but it was taking the whole thing down.
Yeah, and I don't think the fireproofing was installed there yet. That was a construction site.
It was still under construction.
Yeah, that went up really fast.
Okay, let's talk about some things that have been on the minds of our listeners. Julia on Facebook, not Well, we asked the question, what do you think about the city's apartment boom? Will neighborhoods like South End and Noda be able to retain their original character with the influx of upscale complexes? So Julia on Facebook says, not if new development continues to bulldoze cultural hubs and venues. Are we taking that into consideration? And have we lost anything significant in your mind, Jeff, along the way in South Boulevard, in that area? Have we lost anything significant to make way for these units? And you can jump in here too, Eli.
Well, we've seen some of this, you know, calculus of development in recent episodes where, you know, you have places like the Chop Shop in Noda, a favorite music venue that mm-hmm. is likely going to have to relocate because Crescent is building a large mixed-use apartment grocery hotel complex
right there.
Yeah. You know, Jackalope Jack's in Elizabeth, their landowner is talking with apartment developers. That's a neighborhood favorite bar.
Right.
So there is some angst that I'm starting to hear from people in the community about, you know, this is one of my favorite neighborhood places. And even if an apartment has some retail space in it, it's not going to be the Chop Shop. It's not going to be yeah. Jackalope Jack's. So yeah, that's a concern that people are starting to notice.
Even if Jackalope Jack's located on the first floor of whatever is going to be built there, if it's ever built there.
It's not that rambling Victorian.
It's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Noah on Facebook, the new apartments in South End have no character to them. They are all cut and copies of each other. It's kind of what you said. Do you have any complexes over there?
I do not.
Travis on Facebook, while I certainly want the historic districts to maintain their original character, I'm much happier with the urban revitalization in the last 5 to 10 years than the suburban sprawl of the decade before. Heaven forbid Charlotte ends up like Atlanta.
Well, I think
Atlanta's fairly dense, isn't it?
Well, I think sometimes we underestimate Atlanta. There are some exciting, vibrant places that are beginning to figure out how you preserve that cultural fabric as well as embrace the new. But I think the point is exactly the one we were talking earlier, you know, that can we do a better job of many of the advocates for greater density, new urbanism, at the same time really believe in good design, good neighborhood character. And that's where we've got to do more work of having those conversations and putting the incentives in place, but also the other planning tools that are available to really realize that.
I'm going to get back to the look of these buildings that are going up, which are similar in look. How would you characterize the look? Is it mid-century factory?
Well, I mean, beige behemoth.
that's like the suburban neighborhoods that went up in the prior to the recession. If you stood at a crest, if there isn't any hill in the neighborhood, and you stood at the top of the hill and looked at the thousands of houses that had just been built, it was like looking at a sea of beige because that's what homeowners wanted. They wanted neutral colors on the outside of their house, and that's what they got, beige. All right, Kat on Facebook, I'm not inherently against growth. Can we just make sure it isn't ugly and that it contributes to the community instead of taking away from? Are we contributing to the community with this influx of apartment buildings?
Well, I think that depends how you define contribute. You know, with Charlotte growing as rapidly as it is and all the projections showing that growth is going to continue, people need a place to live. And mm-hmm. even though rents are going up now, if inventory doesn't go up at some point, that would get worse. So there's the contribution of providing housing for all these people who are moving to Charlotte, and that's something not to underestimate.
And I don't know when you arrived in town, Eli.
2009.
Okay. Well, I got here in 1985, and you wouldn't be caught dead in South End yeah. in 1985. So mm-hmm. the transformation there has been all positive, I think, except for the traffic. Jay on Twitter, I gave into apartment living for two years. Then the money I was spending hit me, spreading the word to other millennials. Is there a danger in that? They're going to figure this out someday.
to then move out of the apartments?
Yeah.
Well, I think we need to have that. I think there will be a new batch of urban dwellers that come in, replacing the ones that are going to move out. You know, if you've been here since 85, I mean, I've been here since, and you probably would have had this on one of the shows, suburban sprawl mm-hmm. was people were saying, why can we not build denser product on existing infrastructure?
Right.
And we were proposing apartments out in the suburbs, and we're just blasted about it, about the infrastructure that had to come out and meet it.
What is the arrival of all these units doing to real estate right now? It's taking a bunch of people out of the market. Isn't it? Or is it simply serving a need that would never have bought a house anyway? So
And I think Eli touched on that. I do think a lot of the younger urban dwellers would not have been purchasing a house. And I think they watch what just happened to the homeowners. Mm-hmm. I was here in Charlotte. We bought a house at the peak of the market, couldn't sell it.
Right.
Our neighbor across the street was renting. And we used to stand in the yard with me expressing my jealousy over the fact that he could leave whenever he wanted.
Yeah. Well, another issue that we should be looking at in the decade ahead as these millennials do decide to own. Is their assumption that they're going to move to Ballantyne or Union County, or has their experience in the urban core, will it influence them to be looking for product that maybe it's a condominium complex that they can own close in, maybe it's those historic neighborhoods, or maybe it's one of the surrounding communities like the North Mecklenburg towns that seem to be building, this denser, mixed-use kind of new urbanism environment. They want the amenities of suburbia or not being right in the urban core, or maybe they're making choices because of schools, but yet they may still be looking for some of the same lifestyle amenities. And that may be one of the things developers need to be looking
at. So will we see more condominiums going up in the future, not now, and or more apartment to condominium conversions of these buildings that are going up right now? Like in 10 years, maybe they'll become condos.
We've seen that before, where the existing apartments, I mean, go to Florida. Those were apartments in a previous life, and they changed over into condominiums. I think if the market and really the banking allows folks to buy quicker, buy earlier, you will see the movement back to for sale, and it may be the same product that's just switched to for sale.
I know when you buy into a condominium building as an owner, you want to make sure that it's more owners than it is renters. You point out, David, and very quickly here, that you've assumed ownership of a lot of buildings, and there's very few developers who end up owning or running the buildings they build. Should we be concerned about that?
Well, I do think that is a phenomenon that's probably worthy of another show at some point. Is right now it is a rush to market, get it built, and then sell it. And so is it? Will most of the developers you talk to care about it? No, I don't think that's their driver.
David Raven, President and CEO of Northwood Raven, Jeff Michael, Director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, and Eli Portillo, a business reporter for the Charlotte Observer and our token millennial.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
And support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Henderson Properties.